courage, the kind of courage that Mitt Romney demonstrated, for those senators to follow their oath. You know, I don't think there's much debate that if this were a secret vote, Trump would be convicted in a heartbeat, which means that it's not about the facts anymore. It's about political courage. And
I wanted to ask you specifically about Romney. He was the lone Republican to break with his party a year ago, gave that emotional, striking speech on the floor on why he was going to vote to convict the president. Can you talk about this year, where we're looking at perhaps not just Romney that may vote to convict the president?
Well, I think that Romney demonstrated a level of courage that drew the respect of his colleagues. And I think there are a number of senators that really weighed voting to convict a year ago, but didn't. And now they have seen what that acquittal wrought. There is a direct line from that exoneration a year ago to where we are to get today. Had he been convicted and removed, the country would not have had to go through this. And they have to be thinking, do we want to see this happen again in 4 years if we don't disqualify this man? How do I justify that? And so I think that the last trial is the backdrop for this one. And I do think that helps to move any number of senators towards conviction. Now, it's still obviously a very tall mountain to get to two-thirds. But with the introduction now of witness testimony, you have added uncertainty. That was part of the reason why we wanted John Bolton. He was not only in the room, not only corroborated our case, but as some of the Republican senators said, you know, the House already proved the case five ways. Do we need it to prove them six ways? The benefit of bringing in that witness was the potential to open the door for other information that might turn the tide, and that's what the managers are hoping here.
Congressman, I know it was a strange timetable to move forward with this impeachment. President Trump was on his way out of office, but what about the argument from his defense that the House had not fleshed out its investigation? Key questions like this should have been answered before an impeachment vote. You, of course, led an incredibly lengthy investigation with really dramatic hearings that provided a lot of this evidence before the case moved to the Senate.
Well, you know, it's interesting to hear the president's defenders say, look at how the House managers gave all that due process in the first trial, and applauding the investigative work we did. Last year, they were criticizing us for that. Last year, they were saying we weren't providing due process. So they're going to make that generic argument no matter what the circumstances are. As the House managers showed, there's no shortage of evidence. The evidence is overwhelming. The evidence is in the public record. It's the president's own words and deeds and statements and tweets. It's what took place. It's what's shown on that video. So the House managers this year were able to put that case together very quickly because it's so overwhelming and it was so public. And the due process claim that the defense is making now is completely belied by the fact that they had the chance to put on their defense. Mm-hmm. They had the chance to call the president. Jamie Raskin was exactly right today. You want to call witnesses who have first information? You need to do your own work? Just talk to your client. There's no one in a better position to explain why he did nothing when the Capitol was under attack and his own vice president was threatened than Donald Trump.
You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. We are talking to Adam Schiff, who was, of course, the lead impeachment manager the last time Donald Trump was impeached. Mr. Schiff, before we let you go, a quick question from Nina Totenberg. I don't know if it's quick.
Congressman, it strikes me that Jamie Butler is hardly the best person to start with, even though she has new information, because she is a hearsay witness. If you're going to do one witness, why not then ask for a package of several, including, you know, you could go to the White House and say, you know, call the president's lawyer. I mean, we learned in the court's rule during the Clinton impeachment that a lawyer who knows of potentially illegal conduct in the White House isn't immune from being a witness. So why not those?
Well, look, it's very possible that the House managers decide to pursue those other witnesses, but it's also possible that, you know, what they're calculating is what we saw a year ago, which is if you have witnesses who do not want to cooperate, they can tie you up for a very long time. And so they have to weigh the immediacy of putting on these witnesses, of hearing this testimony, of not letting the trial prolong too much, that you lose the focus on the evidence and what's taken place. With the need to bring in people with firsthand information, I think that Herrera Butler is a perfect candidate for the first witness. You're right, some of what she has to say may be hearsay, but hearsay is admissible in a Senate trial. And if the defense wants to try to contradict it, let them call Kevin McCarthy if the Senate decides they think that testimony would be pertinent. So I think this is a witness who adds a lot of value to the House case, presents very little risk, has the possibility of opening the case up to other witnesses in the White House who are willing and potentially some who are not willing. But none of that is foreclosed by this first witness, and new possibilities are opened.
California Congressman Adam Schiff, the lead impeachment manager the last time around, providing some insight as we all wait to see what happens next in the second impeachment trial of the former president. Thank you so much for joining us, Congressman.
Thank you.
And just to reset where we are now, today was supposed to be a rare Saturday session on what people thought might be the final day in this historic trial, the second impeachment trial of Donald J. Trump. We were hearing arguments this morning from lead Democratic prosecutor Jamie Raskin. He's from Maryland, basically calling to hear from a Republican congresswoman who's claimed to overhear a conversation with House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy about a conversation he had with President Trump on January 6th. This has opened up the door to the conversation about more witnesses, which in a vote we heard earlier today, 55 to 45, senators have approved to move forward with. All the open questions now include how these witnesses will be prepared, how they'll be presented, the procedure going forward. Scott Detrow is here with me hosting this afternoon. And Scott, I know there's plenty of analysis that we're going to have later on some of these open questions, including response from the White House.
Right. We are waiting to hear what the current White House has to say about this, the Biden White House. Briefly, Tamara Keith, we're going to take a quick break in a moment or so. But remind us, the Biden White House has not been too excited about this impeachment trial taking place and probably has a lot of open questions about this idea that it could last a whole lot longer now.
Yeah, I can't say that I'm surprised that I haven't heard back from the Biden White House when I asked them to weigh in on today's developments, in part because they have tried every way they possibly can not to talk about this impeachment, not to weigh in on it, not to say what they want to happen, because what they want to happen is to pass the president's American Rescue Plan, a $1.9 trillion plan to help bail out the country from the coronavirus pandemic.
That plan is currently being written out in the House of Representatives as the Senate is holding this impeachment trial. Again, a quick reminder, the Senate is in a quorum call. Here's what happened today. The House Democratic side, Jamie Raskin, lead impeachment manager, began the day saying that he did want to call a witness. Jamie Herrera Butler of Washington State, she's a House Republican. She's somebody who voted to impeach Trump and said that she had a conversation with Kevin McCarthy, the House minority leader. McCarthy told her when he was on the phone with President Trump in the middle of the attack on the Capitol, Trump expressed sympathy for the attackers, said that they seemed to care about the attack more than the people in the building. And that's raised a lot of questions about his mindset and whether he approved of what was going on.
We're going to take a short break. You're listening to live special coverage from NPR News.
This is Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this morning. And stay tuned as live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial of former President Trump continues. Live coverage from NPR.
We can all help save lives and stop the spread of COVID-19 by following a few simple steps. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services urges all of us to wear a mask, wash our hands frequently, limit gatherings, and maintain social distance every time we go out. Learn more about COVID safety, including vaccine updates and information about the locations of testing sites near you at dhs.wisconsin.gov.
Support comes from the Racine Symphony, presenting a Masterworks concert Saturday, February 27th at 7:30. Stream live with no fee on the Symphony's YouTube channel, featuring piano quartets from Zelensky and Brahms and artist-in-residence Joshua Zajac. Details at racinesymphony.org.
You're listening to live special coverage from NPR News. And if you're just joining us, we are, of course, watching the Senate impeachment trial of Donald Trump. Senators have, in fact, voted to hear from witnesses, and they're hammering out the details of that process now.
As they are waiting, we are hearing from some of those senators in the hallways. Here is Colorado Democrat Michael Bennett.
Can I ask you what you thought about the vote for additional witnesses?
I think it's appropriate that we should have witnesses, and hopefully they can negotiate a reasonable agreement and we can continue.
Something less than 100?
Huh?
Something less than 100?
I think that, you know, to see a lawyer stand there and sort of threaten people with that kind of, you know, that kind of thing is, it's kind of embarrassing, really.
We also heard from Kansas Republican Senator Jerry Moran.
Thanks.
Maybe months.
Can you guys work out some kind of deal?
That's the attempt at the moment, is to see what the parameters of witnesses might be. But it's got to be fair and not lopsided. We got to make certain that the time necessary to take depositions with witnesses occurs.
And we want to add one more voice here, an ally of former President Trump. It's Senator Ron Johnson.
Do you think, it sounds like the defense says they want to call lots of witnesses.
Well, again, if you go down the path of witnesses, I mean, you open it up. And if you're really going to have any semblance of fair due process, you've got to let the defense team put on a case.
And we should explain what's going on here. In the middle of this pandemic, reporters have kind of created a big pool system. So it's a lot of sound of phones being held at a distance to senators wearing masks and a little bit muffly. But Kelsey Snell is now with us. She's NPR's congressional correspondent. We have a lot of people who used to cover or currently cover Capitol Hill for NPR with us. Claudia Grisales, Tamara Keith, Nina Totenberg. Kelsey, let me start with you. We really expected, we knew what was going to happen today, and that's that this trial was going to end. Things got really off script very quickly. And as you can hear, the senators who are making the decisions seem to have no idea what happens next.
Well, part of the reason they don't seem to know what happens next is because the rules themselves are unclear about what happens next. I mean, the organizing resolution, which is what the Senate had to pass to in order to turn themselves into a court of impeachment, basically just says that, you know, that the rules say that the witnesses would be deposed first and the parties and managers of defense.
Chuck Schumer, the majority leader.
Without objection, so ordered.
Mr. President, as I understand it, there are discussions underway, and so I ask unanimous consent the Senate recess until 12:30 p.m.
Is there objection? Hearing none, we stand in recess till 12:30.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Well, there you go. The Senate had been quiet ever since that first quorum call after that vote to move forward with at least one witness. Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, has now asked that the Senate recess until 12:30, little less than an hour from now. Kelsey, I don't think that's an indication one way or another that a roadmap has been figured out to go forward here.
Well, no, because they basically had to recess because the rules say that any witness has to be deposed and the other side given time for discovery before they can testify before the Senate. But that's about it. They don't say anything about how witnesses would be admitted, how their testimony should be gathered. They have to pass a whole new set of rules, it seems. It's entirely possible that they may need to vote again on a completely different set of rules to govern what happens next, because, frankly, they weren't expecting this. There was tons of political pressure for them to wrap this up quickly. As we've noted, there's pressure from the Biden administration to move on because they have $1.9 trillion in coronavirus relief they'd like to pass. Mm-hmm. And Republicans also want to move on because they would very much like to stop talking about former President Donald Trump.
Well, one example of how there was pressure to move quickly was that at first we did not expect to be here today at all. David Schoen, one of Trump's lawyers, is Jewish and observant, observes the Sabbath, and requested that the Senate not meet on the Sabbath, today, Saturday. He then withdrew that request so that the trial can move forward more quickly. But here we are now on Saturday, and the Senate has just taken a recess of about an hour as it tries to assess the road going forward. Claudia Grisales, could you remind us what the question is? What happens next? What was voted on today?
Yes. So this morning, House impeachment managers told the Senate that they did want to proceed with this question of witnesses. As Kelsey mentioned, this was something that appeared to be decided that perhaps that they would wrap up today. But the question of witnesses delays that further. And so that has triggered a series of discussions for Democrats, for Republicans, and some bipartisan conversations on the floor of the Senate as well on how to proceed. What is the path forward in terms of these witnesses? The House impeachment managers have only mentioned one, and that is GOP Representative Jamie Herrera Butler. But it's possible that other names could come up from members, and that's what they're trying to sort through right now.
And Claudia, we have a little tape from this morning for people who are just tuning in. Here's how some of this played out. Here's Jamie Raskin, House impeachment manager, bringing up this issue.
We would like the opportunity to subpoena Congresswoman Herrera regarding her communications with House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy and to subpoena her contemporaneous notes that she made regarding what President Trump told Kevin McCarthy in the middle of the insurrection. We would be prepared to proceed by Zoom deposition of an hour or less, just as soon as Congresswoman Herrera Butler is available, and to then proceed to the next phase of the trial, including the introduction of that testimony shortly thereafter.
So whether Zoom or in person, things got testy after that, because here is how the president, this is how Donald Trump's attorney, Michael Vandeveen, responded.
The only thing that I ask, if you vote for witnesses, do not handcuff me by limiting the number of witnesses that I can have.
Essentially arguing that once that door is open, he wanted it all the way open. He went on to say this.
None of these depositions should be done by Zoom. We didn't do this hearing by Zoom. These depositions should be done in person, in my office, in Philadelphia.
Which is where he is from, of course. Tamara Keith, I want to bring you in to talk about how and why President Trump's attorneys are taking this approach.
Well, part of it is that if Democrats call witnesses, they want to make calling witnesses unappealing. And by saying, well, we've got hundreds or 100, or as one advisor to the team texted me, lots, a lot, they are saying, you know, if you want to open Pandora's box, you can open Pandora's box, and we've got a lot. But of course, as
judging from the response in the room at the time, I don't know if Claudia can jump in. I mean, the senators visibly reacted to all of this.
Yeah, this was a very unexpected turn of events. It felt like today was, in a way, preordained in terms of how it was planned out and that they would wrap up today. But you could see the reaction and the huddles and the confusion that have followed on the Senate floor among members for both parties trying to stake this path forward on who these witnesses could be. If it goes beyond the one witness, Representative Jamie Herrera Butler, that the lead manager, Jamie Raskin, asked for. So, yes, you could see it visibly on the floor
today.
And
correct me if I'm wrong, Senator Graham changed his vote at one point, right?
Exactly. Now, he has talked about this before the trial had started. He had threatened that if we are going to go there, if we're going to go to the question of witnesses, then let's ask a lot more folks that he would be interested hearing from. For example, Democrats. Let's get them to testify as well. This is a similar theme he struck even last year when he talked about the potential of witnesses coming up, that would open up a can of worms even back then. And again, he kind of repeated that theme that if there are witnesses, I've got a list. It's a long list and it includes a lot of Democrats that we need to hear from.
You know, Audie, Claudia, I think there's a lot of divide right now. There's a lot. The Senate is a really good example of it. But I think one thing everyone listening and watching can unite around is pounding on the table saying you are sick of Zoom and want to do something in person. I mean, maybe that's one reason why the Senate was laughing. Of
exactly.
Course, I don't think, as you mentioned, I do not think the idea of going up to his office in Philadelphia for depositions is on the table. But it is the big question going forward. How will these depositions take place? When will they take place? How many will there be? And Kelsey Snell, how long this trial may be delayed for.
Yeah, one thing that I think is important to remember when talking about the Senate is a lot of what they do is based on agreements. And this isn't a court in the traditional sense. This doesn't have criminal rules of procedure. This is the Senate deciding how the Senate wants to operate. And so they may be able to decide that they want to have a limited number of witnesses. They can decide how they want to depose the witnesses. And a lot of that will be done behind closed doors. And they will reveal to us when they get to the point of agreement how they will proceed, which means that this entire process is up in the air. And it leaves the entire legislative agenda that Democrats wanted to move forward in the first 100 days of the Biden administration kind of in suspended animation.
And Nina, I want to bring you in here because, of course, trials can take unexpected turns, right? Talk about what you're seeing here.
Well, let me go back to the Clinton impeachment for a minute. They did depose Monica Lewinsky and had it videotaped, but they only used excerpts on the floor of the Senate to make arguments, essentially. Here we're looking at, for example, Senator Graham saying he wants to call lots of witnesses, including Democrats. By that, I assume he means somebody like Nancy Pelosi or Maxine Waters, who used fight, 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 and occasionally said, and Maxine Waters, who occasionally says rather ungoverned things, mm-hmm. that get her into a bit of trouble, not with her constituents, but with her colleagues. But, you know, I really doubt that Mitt Romney and his colleagues who voted to hear witnesses, that's really who they want to hear. But where do we go from here? I mean, there are some obvious people to call for the Democrats. They might call, for example, the president's lawyer, as I suggested, or White House aides that they must know of, who heard the president saying that he was delighted, if he indeed did say that, or seeming confused by why weren't there more people embracing the rioters, if that indeed did happen, or who had conversations with the president similar to the one that McCarthy has told lots of people, according to reports, similar to that where he was weighing in against Pence, even as Pence was in danger and knew that Pence was in danger. Because we've heard White House officials, all of us have heard White House officials say it's impossible that the president didn't know that Pence was being hustled out. Mm-hmm. Because every time the vice president moves or the president moves, you hear that through a speaker system throughout the White House.
Well,
So go ahead.
Let's go to Tamara Keith on that, because, Tam, you spent a lot of time reporting on the relationship between Donald Trump and Mike Pence over the years. How badly was it damaged when the president attacked the vice president for following the Constitution and, as was reported, did not call to check on how he was doing as he hid from a mob trying to kill him?
Right. The vice president chose loyalty to the Constitution over loyalty to President Trump. With President Trump, as long as you are loyal, you are loyal. But the second you cross him, all of those years of, you know, loyalty, of looking off into the middle distance as he said things that were inappropriate that Mike Pence did, it didn't matter because he had crossed him. He would not take an action that he couldn't actually take to try to overturn the result of the election. And it was like 6 days from the insurrection until they actually spoke, until they had a lunch at the White House.
But during those 6 days, Pence rejected calls to invoke the 25th Amendment and has never really given a clear statement on how he feels about what's happening right now.
Pence has kept very quiet on purpose. He would like to have a political future, potentially, and all of this jeopardizes that. But one thing to note, though, is that he came to the inauguration. When President Trump flew off in Marine One and skipped the inauguration, Vice President Pence was there at the inauguration to mark the peaceful transfer of power that has happened so many times before.
And this witness question, Representative Herrera Butler, the conversation she says she was told about between Kevin McCarthy and Donald Trump, this gets to the president's actions once he was allegedly made aware of how bad it was inside the Capitol. That's something a lot of Senate Republicans who have indicated they're open to conviction asked questions about yesterday. And repeatedly, the answer from Trump's legal team was, we don't really know. That's not our place to give you that information.
Which now they are given an opportunity to actually find out. For all of Trump's team arguing, well, gosh, there hasn't been due process, there haven't been witnesses, it seems as though the House impeachment managers called their bluff. I will say that I have been texting with an aide advising Trump's team who says that they see this as pointless. Calling Herrera Butler, at least, is pointless because her statement is out in a press release. She said all of this in a press release, and they say that this is opening the door, dragging out the trial. The pool reporters at the Capitol have caught up with another of President Trump's advisors, Jason Miller. He has a list that he has held up and photographed.
Tam, let me jump in
that
here.
Includes people he wants called.
For just one moment, because Ted Cruz, Republican from Texas, is at the mics right now in the hallway. Let's listen to him.
Managers get witnesses and President Trump doesn't get witnesses. And so if the House managers call Representative Herrera Butler, I think it is very likely that President Trump's lawyers will call Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi is clearly a relevant witness to this matter. Speaker Pelosi can testify as to when she knew about the threats on the Capitol, what she knew specifically. And in particular, she can testify. We heard already that the House Sergeant at Arms turned down National Guard protection for the Capitol on January 6th because of, quote, the optics. And I think Speaker Pelosi can testify as to whether she made a decision based on optics, based on politics, not to have additional protection at the Capitol to prevent the terrorist attack that played out. My view remains we don't need witnesses, but I think if the Democrats want to open this Pandora's box, I don't think it's going to work out well for them.
President Trump himself need one of the witnesses if there are witnesses, and why not?
You know, there is a long tradition in our trials that is reflected in the Bill of Rights that any individual is not required to testify against themselves, to testify at their own trial. I don't think we should attempt to force the president to testify at his own impeachment trial. This is the House managers or the prosecutors. They have the burden of proof. They haven't proven their case. The reason you're seeing this Hail Mary is everybody knows the outcome of this proceeding, which is that President Trump is going to be acquitted. It takes 67 votes to convict. There aren't 67 votes. And those on the extreme far left are angry right now. And today is a reflection of that anger.
Do you think there are any minds that can be changed if witnesses are called?
Sure. I think where we are right now, I think we likely are about 55 votes to convict. I think all of the Democrats are likely to vote to convict. By the way, I think all the Democrats were going to vote to convict on day one. All of the Democrats were going to vote
and
to convict in 2017.
Of
Many
Senator
of these Democrats
Cruz,
went
Republican
on record
Texas,
as
speaking
Trump
in the hallway, significant because he has, in fact, been huddling at times with the defense for President Trump. We are listening to live coverage and listening to the Senate impeachment trial. I want to go to Kelsey Snell to talk about what we're hearing there, because it's the kind of first, I guess, voice we're hearing from the Trump team in a way about what they're thinking about the idea of witnesses.
It sounds very much there from Senator Cruz like they want to call House Speaker Pelosi and some political witnesses that they think would be useful to them in terms of this being a political trial, speaking to their base. Though Democrats have pointed out to me that calls for Pelosi to testify might not bring out the kind of new information, ways to advance the question of what President Trump's role in the insurrection was, things that would be relevant to this impeachment.
And we are going, and the Senate is now in recess right now, as Kelsey was saying, as everyone was saying, they tried to figure out what exactly is going to happen next here. We now have the prospect of at least one witness. The Senate has approved one witness going forward. You have Ted Cruz and other Republicans saying, if not one, why not two, three, four, many, hundreds, as Michael Vanderveen said. This is after both sides concluded their presentations, and we had expected closing arguments. We are going to take a quick break here, though, on Capitol Hill. The second impeachment trial continues after some last-minute suspense on the issue of witnesses. The Senate is in recess until 12:30 Eastern. So now we're going to take you back to Weekend Edition, and when the Senate returns, the special coverage will return. I'm Scott Detrow.
And I'm Audie Cornish. Please stay with us. Again, you're listening to live special coverage of the Senate impeachment trial, the second for Donald J. Trump, from NPR News.
¶¶
listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us. NPR is going to move to weekend edition Saturday for a brief time while the Senate is still in recess. But coverage will continue on weekend edition Saturday, and special coverage is expected to resume by about 11:30 here on WPR.
Support comes from the Racine Symphony, presenting a Masterworks concert Saturday, February 27th at 7:30. Stream live with no fee on the Symphony's YouTube channel, featuring piano quartets from Zelensky and Brahms and artist-in-residence Joshua Zajac. Details at racinesymphony.org.
At home, you can dream of springtime blooms. Register and find out more at wigardenexpo.com.
You're listening to WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, NPR News and Classical Music.
I'm Scott Simon. This hour, Senator Ben Cardin, a Democrat who has said he's undecided on impeachment and how he heard both sides this week. And later, Ron Elving with his reading and if any minds were changed in the chamber or the country. And later, why a play usually done on a bare stage with just a few chairs and a ladder is still performed around the world. And Debbie and Stu Rushfield remember their parents in love for 58 years.
They were the sweetest, most loving, attached, adorable couple that anyone has ever known.
First, we have our newscast. Today is Saturday, February 13, 2021.
Live from NPR News, I'm Barbara Klein. On Capitol Hill, senators are trying to determine the next steps in the impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump. In an unexpected move, impeachment managers moved to call witnesses, and the Senate voted 55-45 to approve it. Lead manager Jamie Raskin says he wants to start with testimony from Republican Congresswoman Jamie Herrera Butler, who has recounted details of a phone conversation with Trump relayed to her by House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy.
Congresswoman Butler further stated that she hopes other witnesses to this part of the story, other patriots, as she put it, would come forward. And if that happens, we would seek the opportunity to take their depositions via Zoom, also for less than an hour, or to subpoena other relevant documents as well.
NPR's Matthew Schwartz has details on what Herrera Butler has described.
A CNN report Friday detailed an expletive-laden phone call in which McCarthy begged Trump to call off the rioters. Representative Jamie Herrera Butler, a Republican from Washington who voted to impeach the former president, first detailed the call to a local newspaper last month, but it was not raised earlier in the impeachment trial. When McCarthy asked the president to forcefully call off the riot, Trump allegedly said, quote, "Well, Kevin, I guess these people are more upset about the election than you are." Senators have now voted to call witnesses to try to determine exactly when the president became aware of the dire situation in the Capitol on January 6th. Matthew Schwartz, NPR News, Washington.
Trump's defense team opposed allowing witnesses, but has threatened to call hundreds of them who've said they were involved in the insurrection. Italy's new national unity government was sworn in today, and its first challenge will be the coronavirus pandemic and the economy. NPR's Silvia Poggioli reports the new prime minister is the former head of the EU Central Bank who saved Europe's single currency, the euro.
Mario Draghi was the first to take the oath.
Giuro di essere fedele alla Repubblica.
He swore loyalty to the Republic and the Constitution and that he will work exclusively in the interests of the nation. He was followed by 23 ministers, a mix of unaffiliated technocrats and politicians from across the political spectrum. Draghi is recognized across the world as a masterful economist with sharp political skills. He'll need them to keep his anomalous coalition together. It ranges from pro-Europe liberals to far-right nationalists who joined hoping to have a say in spending the once-in-a-generation recovery funds pledged by Italy's EU partners. Silvia Poggioli, NPR News, Rome.
This is NPR. An Arctic air mass is plunging temperatures across much of the country. The National Weather Service is warning of hazards from the Pacific Northwest to the Southern Plains through to the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast. Temperatures will be up to 40 degrees below normal in the central U.S. A powerful earthquake struck off the coast of northeast Japan Saturday evening, local time. NPR's Anthony Kuhn reports there are no reports of casualties yet and no tsunami warning.
Japan's meteorological agency initially measured the quake at magnitude 7.1. It was centered off the coast of Fukushima Prefecture, about 37 miles below the Earth's surface, and shook Tokyo to the southwest. The Kyoto News Agency reports that nearly a million households in and around Tokyo lost power. The Japanese government has set up a task force to deal with the quake. Several nuclear power plants were checked for damage, but none has been reported so far. That includes the Fukushima No. 1 plant, which suffered a meltdown following a massive quake and tsunami, which left around 20,000 people dead or missing a decade ago. March 11th will be the 10-year anniversary of that disaster. Anthony Kuhn, NPR News, Seoul.
At the Australian Open, tennis is being played today without crowds at Melbourne Park. Melbourne and the rest of the state of Victoria have entered a 5-day lockdown in response to a coronavirus outbreak linked to a quarantine hotel at the Melbourne airport. I'm Barbara Klein, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Carnegie Corporation of New York, supporting innovations in education, democratic engagement, and the advancement of international peace and security. More information is available online at carnegie.org. And the Annie E. Casey Foundation.
This is Wisconsin Public Radio. Again, we're bringing you coverage of the Senate impeachment trial of former President Trump. The Senate is in recess until about 11:30. NPR bringing us weekend edition Saturday. In the meantime, stay tuned for coverage on that and through special coverage resuming later this hour.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. Thanks for joining us today. And it is not clear what's next in the current and second impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump over his role in the January 6th Capitol riot. The Senate voted against expectations today to subpoena witnesses and documents in that trial. What happens next? How long it could take? Well, let's turn now to NPR's White House correspondent, Tamara Keith. Tam, thanks so much for being with us.
Glad to be with you.
It was expected that the whole trial might even wrap up today, but there were developments overnight and reports. And so tell us about that 55-45 vote today.
Yeah, so they voted to potentially subpoena witnesses and documents in this trial. And it was a bit of a surprise that even the House impeachment managers asked for witnesses. They only asked for one witness, Congresswoman Jamie Herrera Butler, who had last night early this morning put out a statement that said that when the insurrection was happening, afterwards, she was told by Kevin McCarthy, the minority leader, that President Trump that they had had this heated phone call about President Trump calling off the insurrectionists, and that during that call, President Trump shot back at McCarthy and said, well, they seem to care more about the election than you do, seeming to side with the insurrectionists. In the end, there were five Republicans that voted with Democrats to call witnesses. Senators Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, Mitt Romney, Ben Sasse, and Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. For his part, he didn't initially want witnesses, but he says if there are going to be witnesses, let's have a lot.
Yeah. And just to underscore this, the significance of a phone call like that could potentially be that President Trump was directly informed that there was violence at the Capitol and directly declined to do something, right?
That is it. That it could make the case pretty clearly that he wanted this, or that he wasn't upset by what happened after his speech at the Capitol after his speech at the Ellipse and after months of denying the result of the election and calling on his supporters to do something about it.
T-
tell us about the process of subpoenaing witnesses, deposing them. That can take a while, right?
It certainly can, and senators are threatening that this could draw things out for months. I don't know that that will happen. We really don't know how this is going to happen. After the vote, they went into what's known as a quorum call. Now they're recessed. Essentially, the senators are negotiating the next steps. The president's team are saying they want a lot of witnesses. It's unclear how many witnesses or who Democrats would want, but this is a negotiation. Things in the Senate typically get worked out before you see it on the floor. One moment that stands out from this morning, though, is once Democrats had asked for a witness, President Trump's lawyer, Michael Vanderveen, said that this is going to draw out for a long time.
None of these depositions should be done by Zoom. We didn't do this hearing by Zoom. These depositions should be done in person, in my office, in Philadelphia.
He got pretty heated. That caused laughter, which he then said, no, this isn't a laughing matter. This is serious. And of course, now they are negotiating the next steps.
Yeah. And by the way, a special shout out to our colleagues, Terry Gross and others at WHYY in Philadelphia, one of our favorite member stations. So Lindsey Graham indicated that Republicans could try to slow down the process by subpoenaing their own long list, right?
That's right. And that's why there's a negotiation going on. I have been texting with an aide advising the president's team. He says that this whole thing is pointless, that this risks dragging the trial out for weeks, and that essentially the Democrats are asking to depose a witness, Congresswoman Herrera Butler, who put all of this out in a press release anyway. But once that door opens, the potential exists that there could be more people called and more information gleaned, and that doesn't necessarily work out for the president.
And Beers, Tamara Key, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Public health officials worried that fall and winter could bring a twindemic, flu on top of the coronavirus. The spike in flu cases, however, never really materialized. Why? Lulu gets to the bottom of the mystery tomorrow on Weekend Edition Sunday. You can tune in tomorrow by telling your smart speaker to play NPR or your member station by name.
Great to be with you.
That figure from UNICEF, 130 countries, is alarming.
Yeah, it is. You know, we're talking about countries with 2.5 billion people that haven't started vaccinating any of their healthcare workers or really anybody outside of clinical trials. And it's not for a lack of trying. Almost all of these countries, except for some of the poorest of the poor, they're all trying to get their hands on these incredibly limited vaccine doses that are out there right now. And many of them simply can't get any.
Tell us about South Africa. It was all set to start its immunization campaign next week. Suddenly, they switch vaccines.
They were planning on using the AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine, and then results came back from a fairly small study in South Africa that was showing that AstraZeneca might not be very effective against a new variant of the virus that's become dominant in South Africa. So just days before they were going to launch this national campaign, they switched to another vaccine made by Johnson & Johnson. The WHO's chief scientist, Sumi Swaminathan, she says this isn't sort of a problem with AstraZeneca. Many vaccine manufacturers now are finding that their products aren't as effective against these new strains of the virus. And some of the people who get vaccinated still end up getting mild infections. But Swaminathan says the vaccines do appear to keep people from getting really sick with COVID, and that's good news.
Our goal in the first wave of vaccinating people is to protect those at highest risk from severe disease and hospitalization and death.
And she says, you know, all the studies so far have shown that even these ones against the variants, they do protect people from getting really sick and dying.
Do you think other countries might make the switch as well?
Possibly. But the thing is, AstraZeneca currently is the most important vaccine in the global arsenal against COVID. A lot of low and middle income countries are completely banking on it. Countries have pre-purchased more AstraZeneca product than any other vaccine. There are orders out there right now for 2 billion with a B doses of AstraZeneca. And despite some of the new concerns about variants, many scientists say there's good reason to be optimistic that AstraZeneca will continue to help countries rein in this pandemic. This is Bruce Aylward. He's also with the WHO. He says we are at war with this virus right now.
We've got to optimize our control over this virus as rapidly as possible. And we use the tools we can as rapidly as possible.
And he says one of the best tools we have right now are these vaccines.
You might pick up something in his phrasing. For a long time, there was talk about using the vaccine to end the pandemic. Now it seems to be about controlling it.
Yeah, that's right. You know, there does seem to be this shift that's going on right now. And countries are saying just get it under control. The vaccines might not completely wipe it out, but we are probably going to be able to keep it from being as deadly as it has been.
And NPR's Jason Vobian, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
The morning of January 6th, my wife and I saw people fill the streets of Washington, D.C., waving American flags as they walked toward the National Mall to protest the outcome of a free and fair election. This week, when we saw security videos shown at Donald Trump's impeachment trial, we realized many of the rioters used the same sticks and poles in which they waved those flags to smash their way into the U.S. Capitol and beat officers who guarded.